It's Jeremy White.
Apologies to my wife, because when she asks me later today, hey, did you remember to insert something here? And I say, no. I did correctly remember that Jakob Klepisch was in the Greer trade.
And Joe DiBiase.
You can't be Captain Crunch unless you are a captain.
Was Captain Crunch an actual captain? What were his, you know, merits?
Is it even, it's not even captain, actually.
It's Cap'n. That's right.
Of course he was a captain.
Yeah, I bet he faked the resume.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's off today and tomorrow. Rolling solo with you, but I've got Owen Power. I almost called you Owen Power. Owen Parker. There you go. Owen Power's here today. That'd be different. Owen Parker's here today. Josh Schmidt as well. Good morning. I said something to these two right before the show started, and you two can decide what it means about me. I said, as I sat in the studio, I don't know how to turn the television on in here, which I don't think that's because I'm old and technologically illiterate or anything like that. It's just that someone else always turns it on, and it might be not frequent that we need the television on, right? How often are there sporting events this early in the morning?
Like, never.
Right. And we have the Open Championship, so now I have one of the 7 days of the year where having it on would be worth having it on. And I don't know how to turn it on.
To be fair, we also have like 6 remotes in there.
That's part of the problem. It's kind of like when you go to, well, we went to a Airbnb this weekend, or like a vacation rental home, and you get to somebody else's house and there are 7 remotes laid out, and you think, you know what, I'm just not even going to turn it on. I'm not going to try. Pick up every single remote, on, off, on, off. Yeah, there's 7 remotes in here. What are the extra 6 doing? Does anybody know?
And I don't think I've ever seen anyone turn the TV on using a remote. I've only ever seen people touching the physical TV.
Yeah, so I got to get up and do it. Is that the ruling here? If I want to watch the Open Championship, I guess I could stream it on my computer. But that, I already tried to log into the Open Championship website to kind of get a look at that, and it wants me to sign in. Like, oh man, so I have to give the Open Championship some of my personal information in order to stream it. Maybe I don't want to do that. Maybe I just want to turn on this television, which means I've got to play television remote roulette. Which one's going to be the one?
That's not a fun game.
I don't know which one's the one. You do know how to turn it on? Are you, Josh, is your answer to go up and press the button on the side of it?
Well, yes.
All right, then. In that case, I do know how to turn on the television.
With this, though, with this specific sporting event, you're going to have to stream it. So you got to like switch the sources and find the right remote to turn on the right source and all that other
stuff. We have a stream. Here's another question. I apologize for not knowing this. I've worked here for a long time and sat in this chair for a long time. We have a streaming package in this room.
What we're watching here
is streaming and not just like...
No, usually it's like the normal like television cable, whatever. But like there is a streaming stick in there.
Okay.
So
isn't it like Joe's mom's Fire Stick or something? I've heard that that's like where that stick came from.
All of a sudden, it is becoming more and more reasonable that I don't know how to turn things on and stream this.
Exactly.
We don't even know how we're getting the stream here. We think it's Joe's mom's Fire Stick.
I could be standing on the roof with an antenna in 10 minutes if this keeps going the way it's going.
Okay. Well, the Open Championship's underway. I will turn it on. It's Royal Portrush, and I saw Mickelson already chipped in for a par out of a bunker. Looked pretty cool. These courses are always fun to look at, right? You sometimes you want them to have big pot bunkers. Sometimes it's about crazy fescue. Other times, there's not a lot of trees usually. That's what you're looking at, not a lot of trees. And golf as it was meant to be played, that kind of thing. I had a thought today. You know, maybe we won't spend too much time with this, but I did have a thought today as we get ready for the 4th major of the year, which is underway, to ask people that have made the golf pilgrimage like that, how you pulled it off, where it was. Does it matter if you play one of the big ones? I played a course over there when I was 22, a long, long time ago. My whole family went over to Ireland for, you know, one of those trips where your family goes over and meets other... We have family in Ireland that we met. And rented golf clubs and played Portmarnock Golf Links or something like that. Played a course over there and... rented clubs. And, you know, that's the kind of thing where you just go with your uncle when you're 22 and whack it around. It's not like I was taking golf as seriously as I do now that I take it that seriously. But I did play a course in Ireland, but I don't really think it, to me, registers as I went over there and played one of these rounds, one of these bucket list trips. I mean, if you follow Nate Geary from the station on social media, he's been in North Carolina, Tobacco Road, for the last, I don't know, month and a half, playing every course down there like he does all the time. These pilgrimages to St. Andrews, how do you do that? Is it weird that I want to ask that? If you're listening and you've done that, how do you pull that off?
Is it like a travel agency thing?
That's
or like,
right. Don't you have to win a lottery?
Right.
Are there? Can you just go and play any old course over there? Is it like it is around here where if there's a resort that's a stay and play, you call them? Something about it being over there makes it feel like it's not as attainable as it is here.
But I think there's also a part of it that over there it's so much more of a community golf, and it's less, I think, uppity than it is here. It's a little more.
And like the nicer courses?
I think it's more of an available thing to the community over there. So
yeah.
I don't think they have the same level of like private, you need to know a guy to
cost.
Get on this course. Cost is also
cost,
a
right.
factor.
Right. I just went on a trip to Boston and played a couple courses that you can only play if you know somebody that knows somebody.
Right.
And that was amazing. I'm sure that's. It's much easier to get on some of these courses over in the UK, and yet the whole thing to me seems kind of, wow, that's a pretty big trip. That's elaborate. I've been to London. I've been to Europe 4 times and only played golf the first time, again, where I kind of feel like it didn't count. So if you've been, if you've done that, you know, fire me an email or, you know, if you want to give me a call, 803-0550. It's just me today and these two guys, and we'll chat about things, but the whole thing about playing over there, it seems awesome, and it seems worth it, and it seems bucket list-ish, but it also, on some level, seems like it's a lift. And I might be wrong about that. I might have that backwards, that actually it's much easier to do over there. So anyway, 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll, of course, keep you updated on the scores and how things are going at the Open Championship. Brian Koziel will join us at 6:30 today. He of Tee to Green. We could talk a little Sabres, too, with him if we ultimately get to it. The Sabres released their schedule yesterday, so we can talk about that with Brian, but mainly it'll be the Open Championship. That's coming up at 6:30. Also on the way today, Chad DeDominicis of Expected Buffalo. He of the extensive, intensive Buffalo Sabres analysis. I wanted to get him on to talk about the Byram contract, whether or not he's still going to be here, even though he did sign. There was a report yesterday from Jeff Merrick, Elliot Friedman, about the idea that, well, actually, just because he signed doesn't mean he's going to be there. Okay. So that might not be done. I want to talk to Chad about the good and the bad, why it makes sense to keep him, why it might make sense to still move on. So Chad's on the way at 7 o'clock. And then at 9 o'clock, former Bills offensive lineman Jerry Ostrowski, buddy of mine that I do another show with, talking to him about training camp and the Bills offensive line starting to get the love it deserves. Not on the NFL top 100 list, but Brandon Thorne, who does a lot of offensive line breakdowns, has put both Bills tackles in his top 5. So Deion Dawkins, the third best left tackle, and Spencer Brown, the third best right tackle in the league. So we'll talk to Jerry about that. I also want to get his thoughts on, you know, day in the life at training camp as these players are 6 days away. On the training camp front, you know, we are 6 days from the first practice. Rookies have reported, and overnight there was, I want to say, a crack in the dam, a breach in the levee, whatever you want to say about all these 30 out of 32 second round picks unsigned, and the sticking point being what percentage of their contract is guaranteed. Second round picks are kind of fighting here for fully guaranteed contracts. First round picks have that. The Browns and the Texans signed the first 2 picks of the second round to fully guaranteed contracts, and then everything got stuck and nobody moved. Well, there's a move. It comes in at the 43rd overall pick, and I am ready to predict that what this ultimately does is gets everything done. I would bet dollars to donuts that TJ Sanders is going to be at the first practice, that all of these second round picks, almost all of them, will get this thing done quickly. And if they're not signed, I bet they all report. Because what happened late last night was the Niners and their second round pick, Alfred Collins, agreed to terms. What did they do? They agreed to terms, and he got 88% of his contract guaranteed. So I've got the 34th pick at 100% guaranteed, the 43rd pick at 88% guaranteed, and not to get too far in the weeds on contract numbers and all this kind of stuff, the sticking point has been what percentage of the deal is going to be guaranteed. And we wondered, who's up next? Nick Emmonwardy. Is he going to blink and not take 100, and he'll take 98, and 96, and 94, and 90, on down the line, like knocking down dominoes? Well, instead what happened was one of the dominoes in the middle tilted. And if it's up to me to kind of make the analogy, it's like it tipped both ways. Bill's second-round pick, T.J. Sanders, was taken two picks before this. So some really rough math on that would be that Sanders and his second-round pick contract with the Bills is likely to come in between 100 and 88% guaranteed. And when you kind of slice it down to that, I've got seven or eight players to split a 12. I feel like it'll get done. I feel like it'll get done quickly. I've got 6 days for all these picks. Collins was the first. He agrees to a deal that's worth what it would have been worth. Like the total money in these deals, that's already pretty much established. It's just a matter of how much of it's going to be guaranteed. And for Collins, it's 10.3 total and 9.2 of it or whatever was guaranteed. So if I'm the Bills, I have the opportunity now to just move on T.J. Sanders and say, like, all right, 88 for that guy. You were taking two picks ahead of him. How about 91% guaranteed? Boom, let's sign it. Now, maybe there's still a standoff, but the whole thing to me looks like it's another example of the NFL and these little mini controversies we get to that bubble up and just go away. That collusion story in the league has, of course, been worth checking in on. The owners and the PA and how they might have wanted the Barry report because they're working together and this collusion. And I mean, that thing gets messy, but this one is easy. This one is in the CBA. Whatever, in the structure of the CBA, how much to pay draft picks and just fighting for a little bit more of the money guaranteed. It's not been a huge fight yet. Nobody's actually missed camp. Trey Harris didn't report, but that's just rookies. Again, like most of these teams, it's about rookies reporting, not even full practices. So Chargers rookie Trey Harris, he had to be the first one to not report, and now he has an opportunity to report. Just to give you the other side of it, mentioned that Alfred Collins is the 43rd pick, and he signed. Well, Trey Harris, you go down where he is on this board in terms of who's going to sign, who's not going to sign. Trey Harris comes in after Collins. He's 55th. All right, so he's going to get less than 88%. They'll just knock down the dominoes. So I guess that's good news. If you were worried about that, I could tell you I think a good bet would be to not worry about it. And as we approach this Bills camp, we're 6 days away from the first practice, it really feels like it's just cool as a cucumber for everybody around here. I almost want to say that Bills fans have, when it comes to camp and the regular season and the big things to watch, such a calm level of, you know, hey, everything's going to be just fine, no matter what. In Josh, we trust, right? I know there are a bunch of pieces to the defense, and Bosa and Ogunjobi and Hoyt all have their issues when they can actually contribute. And now I've got this Sanders thing. I think that'll be done. And now I've got Landon Jackson on PUP. And like, whatever, it'll be fine. You got two months till the season starts. And then once I'm there, we're waiting till January anyway. We're waiting to see what this team looks like at the end of the season, not necessarily at the beginning of the season. We've kind of seen it all. We've seen them have a slow start where they're 6-6 and fire a coordinator and win five in a row and go to the playoffs. We've seen them dominate start to finish. We've seen them win the division in November, basically. We've seen them cruise. And it feels like it's another season that's kind of set up like that, which, you know, there's some teams out there that are going to be locked in and breathlessly watching every single thing. For Bills fans, I think it's kind of, you know, all right, let's see how it goes. Is Bosa healthy? Is Hairston going to win a starting job? You know, these biggest questions at camp, a lot of the potential biggest questions kind of got put to bed. The biggest one might have been James Cook, and I don't hear a lot on that front. He showed up to mandatory minicamp, so why wouldn't I expect him to show up to training camp and participate and be a part of it? I guess it could happen that he's not participating 100%. But the whole thing is kind of, you know, here we go. Fire it up. Let's watch Josh Allen throw some sweet touchdown passes and see if he can put up monster numbers and everybody eats. Go win 12 games. Go win I mean, 15? What's the number everybody's ready to sign up for? 14? The schedule looks great. It's a high mark season send-off with a couple of tough games. All their tough games on paper right now. All their tough games are from home, or at home, rather. So, like, everything's set up. I guess this is the year that we start talking one seed again right off the jump. I don't know how often we've done that. Last year, they lose two games early on, and it kind of put them in a chase position. It's Baltimore and Houston. They lose those two games. You know, there'd have been doubts about them a little bit, how good they could be because of all the transition. Not many people around here thought they'd be bad, but we thought there might be some rocky parts, and there were. And the one seed race last year was a chase the whole way, and the Chiefs were pretty much out in front the whole time. They were undefeated until they played the Bills, and that kept the race alive, and then the Bills lost almost immediately afterwards, and the race was kind of over. We hoped it could stay close, but it didn't. And this year, I guess that's the best we've got, is the one seed race and how important that is, which years past, I felt like not that important. I know that's kind of counterintuitive. I know that bye is important, but you know, road teams win all the time in the playoffs. It's not like it used to be, so I wouldn't worry so much. But you know, when you're at the starting position and everybody's in the same starting blocks and there's a first-round bye on the line and only one team gets that, that seems significant. That said, what did Detroit do with it last year? They went out and lost their first playoff game. They got bounced, which is, you know, that would be a shocking kind of result for any one seed. So if you have a thought on the one seed, you have a thought on, you know, camp and your general comfort with the season, give me a ring, 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Yesterday I had a caller expressing these big concerns about the defense because of turnovers and the inability for the Bills to maybe sustain their turnover numbers, which they've done over the years. And I don't know, I maybe it's because I often don't have big concerns about the defense, even when it is not great. But this season, they've just added so many pieces and so many potential reinforcements that I'm bullish on them getting better. And we actually had one, speaking of dominoes, we had one more domino fall overnight as well. A point I like to make is that three guys the Bills were counting on last year that played pretty big roles for them were not in the league. I mean, they were in the league looking for jobs. Rasul Douglas, Amari Cooper, and Vaughn. And last night, Vaughn signed. So Vaughn Miller is signed with the Washington Commanders. So, all right, tick off one. Vaughn Miller signs in Washington. He's got his next team. He's got another opportunity here. He is joining a competitor, which I don't know how many options he had or if he's trying to chase a Super Bowl ring, but Vaughn signs with another competitor. He went from winning a Super Bowl with the Rams to signing with the Bills to try to win to now getting on to the Commanders. And they'll be competitive, no doubt about it. They had a great season last year, kind of bubbling up all the way to the NFC Championship game. In looking for like the Vaughn numbers, I found a clip that said Vaughn Miller's 2024 highlights and thought to myself, how many of those will there be? He played limited minutes. People don't think of him as a big-time difference maker for them, but he did lead them in pass rush win rate. He's got a couple speed rush. He might have some good speed rush years left. I thought he was serviceable. I made a case to bring him back if they could do the numbers well enough, but they didn't. They decided to get younger, and I think that's probably the right thing to do. So anyway, Vaughn catches on. He's got his next assignment, trying to win a ring with the Washington Commanders. So is there any sort of what they could have done instead of Vaughn kind of feeling out there? A famous Sabres conversation like that lives forever is like, what if you had taken the 4 first-round picks instead of paying Thomas Vanek? Is there any what if you'd spent $120 million on something else? Not that that's what they ultimately paid, but I mean, they paid Vaughn quite a bit, and they did not get a return on what they paid just because of injuries. He got dinged. He tore his ACL, and that was pretty much it. Right off the bat, it looked great. Right off the bat, they looked like the best team in football, and their defense was closing the door and getting the job done, and you know, the injury kind of took that out for a full year and a half plus. I don't know what else they would have done. But that's a big chunk of change that, you know, in some, if you could undo it and see what else might have happened, who knows? Who knows where they would have spent it? Anyway, 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Yesterday, of course, was Give 716 Day. Thank you to everybody that donated and had an opportunity to take part in Give 716 Day. The final number, money raised for the 716, $1.4 plus million. And we had a great event out at the BFLO store on 716 Day. Yesterday, Alec Anderson was there. Greg Rousseau showed up as well. He had a meet and greet there at the BFLO store on Give 716 Day. And lots of people showed out to donate money, to donate to all these charities, to raise a lot of money. So if you did, thank you. And, of course, congratulations to everybody putting together the community effort to get 1.4 plus. I know I heard on Sabres Live the goal was $1.4 million, and they got over 1.4. So mission accomplished, goal reached, and a great day for those of us that, you know, like to chip in and help these local communities, local charities in this community. Give 716 Day. It was great. It was great. Meanwhile, 803-0550, the phone number, and 1-888-550-2550. It is a Thursday. It's going to get windy today. It's going to maybe rain today, some rain, some thunderstorms. The humidity that's been stuck in the air for a month, feels like a month, that might break today. You might get a break today as we're expecting some wind. So some wind, some cooler temperatures, and maybe some relief. That's what's on the way today. I went out this morning and covered a bunch of stuff because I felt like it was going to rain. And every single time I've checked to see if it's going to rain, I have to clean up the backyard in the last 2 weeks. The answer's been kind of no. And today I feel like the answer was yes. So plan accordingly. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Brian Koziel on the other side on the Open Championship. We got a fundraiser he's a part of to tell you about as well. And thanks again, the fifth annual Give 716 Day, $1.4 million, spearheaded, of course, by the Bills and the Sabres and the Bandits and all the things that they gave away, all the incentives. It goes a long way. Listening to One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker talking about the individual charities you can learn about. That's one thing that day actually does. You get to find all these causes in the community and ways that they can help people. And it's a great day to raise money for some of the organizations you don't know about. It's a great chance to learn about some of these things and fundraising for the smaller stuff. I always like to make a point that fundraising for the smaller charities, the smaller organizations that don't have, you know, massive resources, like that's a day that makes a big difference. So 1.4 raised and the money to be, you know, put to good use. 803-0550 on the Open Championship. When we return, Brian Koziel joins us. Stay tuned and join us if you'd like. 803-0550 on WGR. The Open Championship. Big thanks to Josh, who came in here and turned on the TV. Hey, Brian, good morning. I told these guys I did not know how to turn on the television in the studio. If that's embarrassing, I don't know. But Josh, turn it on. So I've got the Open Championship. I'm ready to rock.
Is Joe that important to the show? He's the only one that knows how to turn the TV on?
He is the one who turns the television on, yeah. But but also, how often are we up watching stuff that's live sports? It's this. It's the Olympics if they're in, you know, Asia or something. It's, I don't know, like, was that it? It really might be the World Cup, if it's early, the Olympics, the Winter Olympics. I feel like I've watched a hockey game here in the morning. It's not a lot, but the Open Championship is one of them. The Open Championship, the British Open, however you want to call it, even though it's in Northern Ireland. Brian Koziel, Tita Green, and Sabres post-game and intermission host as well, joining us on the Worcester Hotline. All right, Brian, so this tournament, you know, the Open Championship, of course, it's the final major of the year, and it's different from the rest. What can you tell us about Portrush? Like, what should people know about this course that maybe gives it an identity away from the other courses that are over there? All I know about it is that, like, Rory was thought to be a favorite going into this because he wins the Masters, and everyone thought, oh, the major's set up really well for Rory. He knows that course well. He loves that course. So what is it, a big hitter's course? Is that the thing?
It's a little bigger of a course compared to the rest of them. This is only the third time that Royal Portrush has actually hosted the Open. In fact, geography lesson, it's the only course outside of Great Britain that has hosted. All the other ones have been in the in England, Scotland vicinity. So, yeah, this one is Northern Ireland, and it hosted in 1951, and then it disappeared, essentially. They never went back there. They did a major renovation, and then in 2019, it came back, and that's, you know, the tournament you're mentioning when it comes back, and Rory is the predominant favorite, and he discussed this week how he didn't handle that week well. He said there was so much attention, so much good and bad. He's like, you know, he had commitments and media requests, and everybody wanted a piece of Rory. And he said the fans were, you know, just wanted to embrace him. He said there were so many people there that were supportive of him throughout his time growing up as a child and his, you know, young golf career and going through it. But he said he tried to kind of put blinders on and tried to kind of play within himself, and he said he just did not handle it well. If you remember from that first day, actually, from 2019, and if people do remember, good memory here, he hit his first tee shot on the first hole out of bounds and ended up shooting a 79 on the first day. And just, you know, it was an awful day for him coming home to where he thought, you know, was going to be like the storybook day. And then the next day he shoots 65 and has the crowd like rallying behind him to try to make the cut. He ended up missing the cut by one shot. So he said, look, this time around, he goes, I definitely am going to try to handle this in a different way. He's like, I'm six more years mature in. He goes, I understand there's a lot of people that really are pulling for me and supporting me. And he said, "Have I wouldn't be here without them. So he's like, I'm going to embrace it this year, take it in. And he's like, hopefully acknowledge everything that is great about being back home. So he's essentially trying to maybe do what we didn't see from, you know, from the first time, which is try to maybe, you know, acknowledge the galleries and do that extra interview and sign that extra autograph and do those extra things that he said. Hopefully we'll put him in a good mindset, and we'll see how it goes. Because coming home here, he definitely is one of the favorites. But this course, definitely in terms of what you see on TV, it's going to be a little bit more, I would say, space in between holes. There's a little bit more bigger hitters course. Most of these open rota courses, the shorter hitter can kind of be more in play. But because of the renovations, they made it a little bit longer than some of the rest of them. And it's the fewest bunkers of any of the course in the open rota. So we know that bunkers in this particular tournament a little bit more penalizing than the ones that are in the United States, because the pot bunkers, and they're meant to be penalizing. So, but not as many as normal, but when they are, there'll still be something that the players are going to have to deal with.
Brian Koziel on the Open Championship. You know, you're talking about, you know, players trying to take it in. We saw Scheffler this week talk about golf and how it might be kind of somewhat unfulfilling to win. Here's Rory, who appears to be in some sort of personal, I don't know, he won the Masters and he seems miserable on some level, right? Like there's a little bit of a, I don't know, the soul of golf isn't having all that much fun. And I don't know if you have an explanation for that, but it kind of feels like that's where we are right now.
Yeah, we actually, yesterday when I was doing the bet pick 10 with Mike and Chris, we were talking about it a little too. It's a sport where 150 or so guys go out and play and only one wins. So in some sense, they're like, you're setting yourself up to maybe be disappointed every single time you go out and play. And, you know, I guess when you're at that level, you know, what did Tiger always say about, you know, I'm only here to win. I'm not here to finish second. I'm not here to do anything else. Like, how do you train your brain to understand that you are going into a tournament? And, you know, obviously maybe Scheffler and Tiger had a different odds, but in general, one of out of 150 here, like, oh, a less than 1% chance of maybe being happy at the end of this week. Like, how do you deal with that mentally? I give golfers and, you know, tennis players credit. You're going into these events where, again, it's one of 100, and like there's only going to be one winner at the end. It's not team sports. Somebody's going to win every game, and it's either one or the other. And when you're playing 82 games a season, like in hockey, or 100 and whatever in baseball, like you're gonna, even the best teams lose 60 times. But the golfers, obviously, for the most part, seemingly have a bigger challenge. Yeah, Scheffler, that conversation this week about saying it's enjoyable for about 2 minutes, and then he's kind of worrying about what's next in his life and all that sort of stuff. I mean, interesting perspective. I would think that maybe as he steps away from it more, or as time goes on, that he'll appreciate it more. But it's got to be also too some of the things in the moment. Like, there's so many commitments when you're a winner that maybe it feels at times like it can be a hassle when you want to maybe just sit back and enjoy it. Yeah. So I guess I get a little bit of what he's saying, but I guess add it to the long list of things that are mentally challenging about this sport that, you know, you and I play it for fun as amateurs, and we have our good days and our bad days. And it's still sometimes like I have to sometimes out on the golf course be like, Brian, don't be so hard on yourself. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Literally the only, you know, and it's a good ego check, I think, for all of us. Like, Brian, the only one who really cares about what the score is you. So if you don't let it bother you, then
right.
It's okay, you know, kind of thing. But there's so much personal pride, I feel like, sometimes when we play, and I think it's okay to have that. Sometimes it can be tough when you're playing. I get it.
When it comes to your picks here, you mentioned you and Chopin the Bulldog do your picks. Who do you like in this? I mean, Scheffler's the favorite. He's never finished top five at an Open Championship, but this course might set up a little better for him to do that. I know, like, strokes gained, he's been the best, and there's a good reason he's the favorite. Anybody else you like here? Fleetwood to kind of come back from his collapse a couple weeks ago. Who's on the short list of guys you like to win it?
Yeah, Fleetwood would be a great story. I think, you know, still looking for that elusive PGA Tour win. This would count as one. The 2 weeks ago, he didn't handle the final stretch very well at all ended up with Keegan Bradley coming back to win. But, I mean, that would be a great story if so. There's a couple of players that I feel like are trending well, that are playing well, that I feel like, you know, would play this course well just because of their background. Matthew Fitzpatrick's been playing great over the last month. He had a top five finish last week at the Scottish Open. Sepp Straka I like a lot this week. He's won twice this year on tour. He had been kind of a DP Tour World European Tour player for most of his career, but he's been starting to play the PGA Tour now regularly because of his success. Austrian player, he's 50-1. I like that quite a bit. And a couple more bigger names, I guess, that we always see in contention in these tournaments. Hatton is a guy that's still been playing well. Even Hatton on LIV has been playing great lately. And Ludvig Åberg last week had another top 10 finish at the Scottish Open. His game's been trending well. We know talent-wise, we've been keeping an eye on him of like, hey, when he's going to break through and win a major. So those are some of the names maybe I think to think about beyond the big dogs here. Schauffele, of course, the defending champion, he seems to be in kind of that mindset to play a course like this really, really well. So putting this week for Scheffler, we know putting is always a stat to watch because a lot of times he putts below average and still wins. The greens this week are very slow in comparison to what the PGA Tour normally does. So I don't know if that's going to help Scheffler or hurt him more, or maybe, you know, just give him a little different mindset of like, hey, these greens are totally different here. Let's see if I can handle something different. So that'll be something to watch because the greens are definitely slower. Just watching some of the early coverage that I've seen so far, maybe it'll allow Scheffler to be a little bit more aggressive on the greens and give him a little different outcome to some of these other tournaments where he has been struggling with the putter.
I read an article about like this tournament and what it represents and how the – maybe it was Scheffler, actually, that had quotes in there from him, how if there's one thing that does set the Open Championship apart from the others, it's that this kind of course, you have to play a lot more shots. He says, you know, when you're playing at the U.S. Open or you're playing at Augusta, you know, you see your ball, you bring one club over there. You know what you're going to hit. And then in a tournament like this, he might bring five clubs over because there's a lot of different ways to play the same shot, and that's not always the case in the other tournaments, the other majors, and here in the U.S.,
yeah, I think it's fun that it allows for creativity, and the land obviously is a piece of the decision making that goes into how to hit these kind of shots. And I think that's why, you know, typically you see some of the American players struggle to make that transition. I mean, Phil Mickelson was a great example of that. He for years tried to come over and just play his one style of golf, which for a lot of us, you know, we knew he was the wedge master. He was throw it up in the air and do all sorts of things, and it never worked. And then suddenly he had that change of mindset of realizing, like, look, I gotta stop trying to play, you know, square hole peg into the circle space vice, you know, mentality. Like, he's a, I got to adjust to the course here. And he started to get creative and started to hit more different kinds of shots. We know Tiger won that one year without even hitting a driver the whole time. So different mentality. I think that, you know, DeChambeau is a guy I'm not picking this week because I still think he plays it his only his one way. He struggles with his irons. You need to be more creative and hit different kind of shots. I think that's what's cool about this tournament. I mean, we get to see guys try all sorts of different things, especially on their approach shots, with hitting different kind of clubs and, you know, different kind of trajectories and even putting from, you know, 50 yards off the green. I think that's something that you definitely get, which is a unique feel that we don't get in the courses in the United States.
Watching John Rahm putt for birdie right now. Wouldn't it be nice to see Rombo back to some degree. He was in a tournament a couple months ago, finished in second, but, you know, he has made his birdie putt. So John Rahm goes to 1-under through six. Brian, thank
somebody,
you. What's good?
Yep. I was going to say, I'll ask you this because I had trouble asking. Somebody asked me if the PGA Tour could take one player back.
Rahm.
Just to help. Would it be Rahm or would it be DeChambeau?
It's a tough one because DeChambeau has become
so much
more.
I said that was tough.
Like, that is tough.
I know.
I'll take DeChambeau. It's a really tough one. If you take one back, that is...
I said Rahm right away, too. Just like you, it's funny you answered just exactly how I did, and then they're like, not Bryson, and I was like, ooh,
yeah.
I don't know. I think those two have equal status of power, maybe of.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think those are the two you want, and you know,
yeah,
past that, like maybe I don't know Cam Smith, but nah, you know, it would be Rahm and be DeChambeau. Thanks, Brian. Enjoy the Open. Where are you guys for Tee to Green this week?
Okay. We are at Niagara Falls Country Club. It's nice. Going to be in front of the final round of the Porter Cup, which started today. And if you can give me 30 seconds on that. Yesterday was round one, and it's free admission. It's some of the best college players across the country and top amateur players, including Anthony DeLisanti, Western New York native, who's the reigning now New York State men's amateur champion. Tee time started 7:30 this morning. They run all the way through after 1 o'clock this afternoon, but it's free admission. You can go up and get nice and close and watch some of the best college players in the world. Tiger Woods has played in this. We mentioned Phil Mickelson. He's played in this. Some of these players that are playing here right now have played in this event, like Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka, all these guys have played in this event. So, you know, if you're looking to go watch some good amateur golf, and now that the weather is going to be a little nicer here these next few days, it's free. It's up in Lewiston at Niagara Falls Country Club and PorterCup.com if you want any of the tee time information.
Very good. Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jeremy. Talk to you later.
Brian Koziol on the Western Hotline. The Open Championship is upon us. 803-0550 and 1-888-552-550. Chad Edeman, this is 7 o'clock on the Sabres. And Bo Byram, what to do here, whether or not they're going to trade Matias Samuelsson. We have a Sabres schedule out. Heard something from Paul yesterday I wanted to get to about the NHL and something they're moving to with their schedule, how they have an idea of a kind of league they want to be. I'll get you that as well. All coming up here on WGR. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Joe's off today. When I was on vacation, Josh, you texted me something. You might have tweeted me something too. You texted me that you want to have a hat bracket where the four of us submit our favorite hats and we have a hat off.
Oh, it's not just the four of us.
Oh, who's in it?
It is station wide.
Oh,
yeah.
All right, a hat bracket. Well, I've got a new one today.
That's a very good hat.
I think this is the draft hat, right? The Bills draft hat.
It looks kind of familiar.
They had
familiar.
Three yeah. or four different options at the BFLO store. And this you know, gray, like the 3D logo. They had a blue one. They had white and red standing buffalo. Anyway, when you said it to me, station-wide, everyone puts their two best hats up. I thought, all right, hat bracket. We'll do a hat bracket. And people vote in which is the best hat. How many hats do you have?
That's a great question. I would say close to 75.
Okay, I was going to say, yeah, my number is at minimum 60.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never done an actual tally, though, so I don't know. I have a whole box in my parents' basement with old hats I don't wear anymore. So, like, the hats I already have is probably close to 50, like, that I have out and wear on the regular.
Yeah. I have a lot of hats. And just the idea of Should we have our own conference tournaments where we have our own hat bracket? How are you going to pick your two for this station-wide hat bracket idea? Do you know your two? Are you picking your two favorite, or are you picking the two that you think would win the bracket? Because that might not be the same.
I'm doing one of each. So okay. I'm picking the one that I think will win and then the one that I think will... I don't want to reveal my picks, though. You know,
one pick with your head, one pick with your heart, basically?
Yeah.
Well,
a pretty good way to put
it. I have no idea what I would pick. A hat bracket.
We are splitting it up into conferences. So we have the morning show conference and the afternoon show conference.
Look at this. Look at the elaborate nature.
There will be more to come on it, too. It's pretty elaborate so far. Owen and I are trying to figure out, you know, seeding and brackets and all that. Well, you got to seed the hats together. You know, you can't just throw them all out there.
Seeding. Wow. Yeah. They're seeding. What's the worst hat I have? I do have a hat that just says PGA Tour.
It's not great.
Right, it's not great.
I have a MLB All-Star Game hat from like 2022 that I just found somewhere and got it for free.
I've got the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds hat.
That's a good hat. It's a good logo.
I got that because of Owen. Just saying, like, what if I put a hat in there that Owen votes against his own hats because he's voting for my hats?
Oh, that would be tough.
Play the player, not the game.
You got an Ice Wolves hat? Those are better hats.
I have an Ice Wolves winter hat.
That's a good one.
It is still a hat.
It's a hat. Oh, that's true.
Beanies are not excluded from this.
Cowboy hats allowed in the hat bracket?
We don't need to expand this anymore. I'm already overwhelmed with my choices.
If the word hat is in the title, it's a hat.
I know. Yeah. I had baseball cap in my head, and now there's a whole other world unlocked.
The boss calls like, I notice you guys, your work has really been slipping. What's going on? I'm spending all my time in this hat bracket. I got a lot of time. Oh, I'm really busy. All right, Chad Dietemanisis of Expected Buffalo when we get back on the Bo Byram contract, 2 year for him, what it means for the Sabres, why it might work, why it might not, you know, what their plan could be from here. I wanted to talk to the use of Byram, whether or not he's good, how he can be used in the right ways. He's a one-dimensional, finger quotes kind of defenseman, and they have, instead of trading him, signed him to a 2 year extension. So we'll get Chad's thoughts on that and their offseason as it's gone so far. It's coming up 803-0550 here on WGR.